I'm Christine Dean, and this is live from Studio A, and we're happy to welcome an artist to our studios. I think it's your first time, right, Alex?
First time live on the air,
yeah. Awesome. Well, welcome. Alex Crankshaft Larson, and he is a blues man, a rockin' blues man out of the Twin Cities, and he's going to be performing at the Caravan du Nord event, which is happening this afternoon and tonight, and there's workshops going on this afternoon, including 3 to 4, Becoming a National Act, a conversation with the band Sleep Study, 4 to 5, DIY Touring, which Crankshaft's going to be part of, and then there's a social hour from 6 to 7, and the music kicks off at 7:30 p.m. with Brianne Marie in the Front Porch Sinners, and then 8 o'clock, it's Crankshaft, Sleep Study at 9. So, whole big thing going on, and this is all at the College of St. Scholastica starting this afternoon. All right, we got all the business stuff out of the way. Well, welcome, Alex. Great to have you here. And you are from the Twin Cities area. You've had a few albums out so far, and I think you're maybe working on another one.
I'm getting ready to work on another one, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk about all of that, but first, what do you want to start with here?
Tune-wise?
Tune-wise.
Tune-wise. Let's do Kingpin. Goes like this.
I got a lo-fi enchilada mama. Met her in a moonlight bowl of rama. She had a leopard skin skirt and a pink flower in her hair. She was standing at the end of the bar red turn, letting that tailor-made cigarette burn, waiting for her ball to come back to pick up a spell. She was a queen of the strikeout scene, a light brown skin pin crushing machine. Had a 12-pound ball, she ruled with an iron fist. Where she moved through the smoke-filled air, letting men drool and the women glare. With a frame like that, it'd be hard for anyone to resist. I wanna be your kingpin. Set me up and belly that ball and knock me down. Just set me up again. I don't want to be your one time, but a ball of sin. I wanna be your kingpin. Set me up, baby.
Roll, baby. Yeah.
Crankshaft live from Studio A, and a tune from his most recent album, What You Gonna Do. And you did that one along with the Gear Grinders, right? You're a duo that backs you up from time to time.
Yep. Well, on that song, actually, we included a three-piece horn section as well.
Nice.
Yep.
And you recorded the album in a barn, right?
Yep.
What made you do that? Because it was not a barn. You know, there's probably barns that people have turned into studios. This was just a barn, right?
Yeah, it's just an old hayloft that we recorded in. The barn was built in like 1914, so it was built out of aged, you know, by the time we got there, it was aged, but pine, and it sounded wonderful in there. And I wanted to make an album that sounded really warm and big, and it made sense to do it in a big wood space, so we picked a barn.
And you would know that because you also have kind of a carpentry background, right? And construction background. So yep. you know a little bit about that kind of stuff. A
little bit, yeah. I actually ended up wiring that place myself so that we could record in there. And fixed a bunch of... We made a music video in the same space like a week later and had to replace a bunch of boards that were rotten on the floor and stuff so people wouldn't fall through. And we tempted the fate of that place... For sure, there were like 140 people upstairs when we made the music video in a barn that was like 100 years old. It was crazy. Yeah.
Oh, well, a lot of fun. And you've since kind of started doing music full time.
Yep.
But you still have those. It's nice that you still have those skills because it comes in handy, it sounds like, from time to time.
All the time. Like today, I got a...
You were doing a little, yeah.
I got a multi-tool sticking out of the ground plug on the outlet, and then I got a guitar cord going from there, and then I got that taped onto the top of my amp because there's like tons of static in this room, and I had the ground plug on my amp is missing, so it's like, I think I can make this work. So I'm going to post a picture on it later on Facebook.
Nice.
It's ridiculous.
Well, and some behind-the-scenes stuff. Alex's mom is actually here, and she was saying, yep, and I was kind of teasing him that he's kind of the MacGyver of music, and she said, yeah, when he was a kid, he loved MacGyver, so yeah, you must have stuck with you.
Yep.
Good skills to have, though, especially when you're a musician.
Thanks.
So tell me about the Gear Grinders. Or do they play with you pretty regularly?
Yep. We're going to be playing together two times this weekend. We're playing at Famous Dave's Uptown tomorrow night. And then we'll be at this crazy roadhouse bar in Zimmerman, Minnesota, called the Whistling Pickle together on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. But you started out when you were doing the crankshaft thing. You started out by yourself, right?
Yep.
Kind of doing the one-man band thing.
Yep. And then I started adding upright bass or... actually, the first thing that was accompaniment was a djembe player playing a djembe hand drum. And that was awesome. My buddy Pat Nudd played with me every Sunday at my house gig. And it's really nice when you're doing the one-man band thing to have a tempo reference, you know, somebody else playing with you to help keep the pocket going, you know. When you're doing the one-man band show, I've gotten a lot better at it now, but when you're doing it all by yourself, you're kind of like in a boat in the middle of the ocean with no reference point, you know. It's like, is my tempo slipping right now? I'm not sure. I hope it's not.
Is it because you're multitasking?
Well, yeah, you got
it's
a
like
lot.
It's like patting your head and rubbing your belly, which I'm not failing at right now.
Definitely.
Sort of thing? Okay.
I had to do that before I could ride my dirt bike.
Really?
My dad was like, all right. He gave me a CR80 dirt bike for my, I think, 12th birthday or something like that. He was like, before you ride this, you got to learn how to pat your head and rub your stomach at the same time. Because it had a clutch, you know, on it. So maybe that's where it all started. I don't know.
All right. The beginning of your multitasking. Well, yeah. As long as we're back there in your childhood, I want to know, like, when you started being interested in music and when you started playing music.
I think the interest in music happened early on. My parents were semi-truck drivers, and they had a very large collection of music.
Wait, because that you say that on your website, in your bio, and I thought, okay, that's just like a romantic story that he's putting on there. That's great.
Both of them, they were owner-operators. Mom, who's sitting right behind me, mm-hmm. She knows how to drive an 18-wheeler. And
I'm giving her the thumbs up right now.
Yeah, totally. So they had a really big collection of music that was listened to a lot when I was younger. I think that made an impact on me. I've got an uncle that plays in a band. out in Gray Eagle, Minnesota. I saw him playing growing up. Jackknife and the Sharps. I saw those guys growing up, and I don't know. I don't really know. I think, you know, we grew up out in the country, and there wasn't a ton to keep us occupied. I mean, we were, you know, like dirt bikes, four wheelers, water skiing, that type of stuff. And then there was like music, and that was just kind of always that way. I think, I don't know. What was the reason? Why did you put us in piano lessons?
Oh.
She, okay, that's kind of what I figured. She wanted to keep us out of trouble. It worked good. We got in plenty of trouble anyway, but, you know.
Well, and I was just commenting before the session, there's a video on your website for the song Neighborhood Boys.
Neighbor Boys.
And now I'm pretty much imagining that was what your childhood was a lot like. It's this wonderful video and song, and these kids just running wild and having fun.
Our thing was the Rammerkers down the road had a golf cart, an Easy Go golf cart, and they took the governor off of it, so this golf cart went like 35 miles an hour. So that was our thing that got us in all the trouble. And the crazy thing about Easy Go golf carts is they go just as fast in reverse. So you can imagine us going 35 miles an hour down the road in reverse, you know?
That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, totally.
All right. So what did you got a guitar? How old were you? Was the guitar your first instrument? No, your piano, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Was your first instrument?
Yep.
How long did that last? How long did those piano lessons last?
2 years.
Okay.
I think right away I was like, I want to get a guitar, Mom. And she was like, you got to take piano lessons first for 2 years. And then 2 years were done. I got a guitar from my uncle. The rest is history.
All right. Yep. And then when did you add some drums along the way?
That didn't happen until like 2008. I started playing guitar in 96, and in 2008 I decided to start a one-man band show with the intention of playing at the Anoka Car Show. So it was just kind of like a funny, kitschy thing. I'm going to name my one-man band Crankshaft, you know, go play at the car show. And it turned out that people really liked it, and it blew my mind, because before that I was in like not palatable music to the general population. I was playing like punk rock or like really thrashy acoustic rockabilly type music, and I don't know, I just started doing this and people liked it, and then I was like, well, this is way more fun than doing contracting, and I might as well just try to make a living at this. And that's kind of how it happened.
Were you doing that stuff in bands with people?
Yeah, I've kind of started playing in bands right off the gate, right when I got my guitar. So I've been in a handful of bands before I started Crankshaft.
And then once you started on your own, what was it like just being the only guy up there?
It made rehearsal really easy. It was, I don't know, it's nerve-wracking to do a solo show. Is it's a learning curve. You don't really have much to fall back on. I got lucky early on, and I got some really good advice from a guy named Mark Vetch, who owns Mr. Mark's Music in Anoka. And he gave me a lot of guidance about, you know, talking in between songs to try and connect with people and explaining what songs are about and changing keys and tempos to keep things interesting. And I think that helped me a lot early on. And I'm still developing honing my craft. Like, I still feel like I'm learning every time that I play. You know, I think that that's a thing that just keeps going, you know, like you're never really, if you're done learning with music or your art project, you might as well be retired, you know?
Mm-hmm. When did you start writing songs?
Right away, right when I started playing guitar. Mm-hmm. I think we did the talent show, and me and my brother started a band. Like the first band that we started playing in public, we played at the talent show when I was in eighth grade and he was in sixth grade, and I had written like, I don't know, six or eight songs by that point already. So I was like, however old, 14 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was about when I started writing songs. I didn't start writing good songs until I was like 23, 24, but, you know.
Well, and I always wonder when people say that, so how did you know it was a good song finally?
Well,
how did you say, you know what, that's it, that's the one?
For me right now, it's easy to figure out what's good and what's not, because I'm playing like 150 shows a year. So if I, if I play a song out in public and it tanks a half a dozen times, then it's like, well, I really like this song, but people don't like it. And that's a bummer, but, you know, it's the easiest way to abandon a song is just listen to the crowd, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's hear another one, and hopefully that the crowd likes.
Right.
Or a new one is fine, too. We can test it out on the crowd.
Well, I got to give me a second here to – I got to get my – kazoo holder thing. As long as we're talking about Neighbor Boys, I feel like I should do Neighbor Boys.
I'm just fine with that. It's a fun song, and I think that's the first time the words kazoo holder have ever been mentioned live from Studio A. So it looks suspiciously like a harmonica holder. There.
It is it is a harmonica holder, but all I use it for is to hold my kazoo. All right, so I wrote this song for these kids in my neighborhood. The Gilbertson boys, they asked me to write this song for them, and it was a pretty cute way that they asked me. They left a chunk of plywood on my front step that said, "Will you write us a song called Neighbor Boys?" And then they all signed it, so I definitely couldn't say no to that, and this is a song I came up with for them.
On last day of school, they holler and they shout, tear out the walls, can't wait to get out. There are notebooks and the folders I'm thrown in the trash. When the last bell rings, they are gone in a flash. Neighbor boys, neighbor boys. Will they kick rocks, beatbox, scream and yell? It's hot outside now and you sure can tell. You better jump in the river where the water is cold. Enjoy it now before you're back in school. Neighbor boy, neighbor boy. They can't wait until they're old enough to cross Main Street, until they get a car, they think their life is incomplete. I tell them, slow down, boys, these are the best days of your life. They won't listen to me, but that's all right. Neighbor boy, neighbor boy. Well, the days are getting shorter, soon the leaves they will fall, and those little feet will be walking down that long school hall. Neighborhood will be quiet for 6 hours a day, but when the last bell rings, they'll be hell to pay. Neighbor boy! Neighbor boy!
Crankshaft live from Studio A and Neighbor Boys, and a fun video for that one on his website, crankshaftmusic.com. And that was from an earlier album, I think, right?
Yep, that was the one preceding the current.
Okay, and now how many albums do you have out these days?
Well, I'm only selling What You Gonna Do and a live CD called Boogie Melt. And the reason for that is I'd rather just keep pushing forward than selling older stuff. So
and your earlier stuff you kind of did yourself, and maybe it was a little more I don't know what the word is, but not as produced maybe, or not as
The first thing that I did was recorded in my basement with like three microphones. Mm-hmm. It was pretty effective because it was just a one-man band release. But yeah, they're getting slicker. I've noticed I'm getting more, I'm desiring a more polished sound as time progresses. So, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why.
So you just are kind of getting the stuff out there that reflects what you're doing now.
I guess, yeah. I guess I'm just trying to be like, I'm trying to sing good. and I'm trying to play my guitar well, and I'm hiring guys to back me up that are really talented, so I want their music skills to be appreciated. And, you know, it used to be that I was kind of driving for a distorted, like, I don't know, almost like punk rock approach to production in the albums. And I think now I just want them to be slick sounding, you know, mm-hmm. so that you can focus on the arrangement and the playing and the lyrics, you know, so it's just easier to listen to, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
where are you going to be doing the next one? Have you started working on it yet? I know you...
Well, the hard work's done. I got like 15 songs written, so I'm ready that way. I haven't started yet. I'm kind of on the fence about where I'm going to record at. I got to figure that out, but it's coming up soon. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's like getting towards go time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and we mentioned earlier you're going to be doing a DIY sort of workshop in a little bit here, and you really seem to be a man who knows about that. Like you know, just looking at the stuff that you've done and on your website, it seems like you're kind of working your butt off for your music here.
Yeah, I don't mind working at all, and I really like the production side of the music business, you know, like producing albums and deciding how mixes sound on albums and, you know, directing and editing music videos. All that stuff is really fun to me. You know, I was like really heavy into the arts when I was growing up, and I just kind of feel like a kid in a playground now, because like I'm an adult and I'm making decent money and I can buy sweet cameras and stuff, and like it's just fun, you know, to do that kind of stuff, to be established enough that I can make art and make a living doing that.
Mm-hmm. But what did it take to get established like that? Like, how much touring have you done, and is it really kind of just constantly being out there? And
at the beginning, it was, well, I mean, up until just about 9 months ago, I was managing my calendar and everything myself and doing like 150 shows a year, and playing that amount of shows and setting up that amount of shows is a ton of work. I mean, if you want to get to a place where you can comfortably make a living doing this, you got to do a ton of track laying, you know, and I think that I did that, and I must have done a pretty good job because I got picked up by a pretty prestigious booking agency this spring. So it's nice. Now I can really focus on playing and producing art, and I have a little bit more time to myself, and it's pretty great. But yeah, it took a minute to get there.
And a lot of work.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And so they basically just tell you where to go now, huh?
Basically, it's that simple.
That's nice.
Yep.
Well, we have time for one more. What do you want to finish up with here?
Well, I feel like I should get this kazoo thing off of me. probably do Barking Up the Wrong Tree. That's from the latest release as well. Or, you know what I should do? I shouldn't do that song. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a song. This is a song that I wrote about this Anoka legend. And the legend goes like this. This guy named Cowboy Mel, who was like definitely a ladies man around town, drove a Cadillac convertible, and he was a barber in town in Anoka in the 50s and 60s. And Cowboy Mel decided to have an affair with this girl who happened to be married to a cement truck driver. And when the cement truck driver found out about the affair, I was told by a friend who heard it from another. You and my wife fell hard for each other. You're stupid as a brick, you out of dumb luck. Cause this man drives a ready-made truck. How many times did you take her downtown and it dropped dead Oxford red in her gown? How many times did you take her in back of your brand new midnight blue Cadillac? When I find it, I'm gonna fill it up. Uh-huh. From the floor to the seat till it's going down the street like ice cream dripping down the side of a Dixie cup.
I know that you're parking on secondhand main. My launch is gonna be as heavy as a train. A max overloader with a special made mix. A fast setting suit for suckers and pricks. Gonna fill it up for the town to see. The heartache and pain that you caused to me. I bet you're gonna come from miles around to see a Cadillac frame making love to the ground. When I find it, I'm gonna fill it up. From the floor to the seat that is rolling down the street like ice cream dripping out his eye. Oh, the Dixie Cup.
I hope you treated her well, Cowboy Mel. Was it worth it? Only time will tell. You got a lack of vulnerable, submergible and burnable. It's bearable and crushable too. It's your obsession, your number one possession. Sign of how to make you blue. You when I find it, I'm gonna fill it up. From the floor to the seat till it's flowing down the street like ice cream dripping on the side. Well, the Dixie Cup.
That is Crankshaft live from Studio A, and I was afraid that's where that was going.
Yeah.
Moral of the story, never have an affair with the wife of a cement truck driver.
Right, especially if you drive a convertible.
Oh, boy. Well, Crankshaft, thank you so much. I'm so glad you finally were able to come in our studios.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Christine.
And looking forward to that next album whenever that happens. And just to remind people, he's part of the Caravan du Nord, which is happening at the Mitchell Auditorium at the College of St. Scholastica. Artist workshops start at 3. And then Crankshaft is doing a workshop at 4 called DIY Touring. There's a social hour from 6 to 7, and then the concert starts at 7:30. Crankshaft will be playing at 8. Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Rick McLean and Aaron Welch. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Arts. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.
Hello!